Dave Fanning on 2FM.
Okay, it's favourite album time, where we ask guests to choose their favourite album, believe it or not, or the album that influenced them most. Today is the turn of Kevin Barry, author of the critically acclaimed novels City of Bahan, Beetlebone, Nightboat to Tangier, and general all-round man of letters. So what album has Kevin chosen for his favourite album? Well, you can figure it out. I'm going to play a track from it now, just before we talk to Kevin himself. And let's take this one. It's called Listen to This.
I was thinking of a compromise when I saw the
There you go. Listen to This is the name of the song. That's from Dexy's Midnight Runners. Kevin Barry, you have picked this album. Welcome to the programme. Why did you pick this? Why does it mean so much to you?
I tell you, Dave, when I got the email, you have to go with instinct on these things. The email said your favourite album, and I immediately said, oh, that'll be Dexy's. That'll have to be Dexy's, you know. Mm. We have to go back through the windmills of our minds now to the late summer of 1985.
Yeah.
So I'm 16 years old on O'Connell Street in Limerick, and I'm going down to Golden Discs with my sweaty fiver in my hand. And I'm buying a new Dexy's record because I loved their first two albums. I loved Young Soul Rebels, which came out when I was a child of 11, I think, in 1980. And I loved, of course, the famous 2RIA a couple of years later.
Oh, wow, so that's really interesting. So, like, in other words, you did like that, because, I mean, I loved the first album, and 2RIA obviously would Come On Eileen and everything else that happened around that was great fun as well, and all the videos and the MTV rotation. And then when this one came out, I know you're going to slap me over the wrist here now, but I kind of said, oh, yeah, okay, fair enough. And then I didn't really, I kind of left it there. So the first time I've listened to it in about 40 years is yesterday.
That was a common occurrence with this record, I think. He's a famously contrary character, Kevin Rowland.
He is. He was in here a few times. He is actually very, very nice. But, I mean, he does have a few demons in his head, I think.
Yeah, and actually, there's a really interesting backstory with this record. He felt that the record company had pushed the band in an overly commercial way with the whole sort of Come On Eileen, 2RIA. And this record in 85, Don't Send Me Down, was a real kind of answer to that, because it's pure awkward. You know, it just makes no sort of concessions to what a pop album should have sounded like in 1985. The first single that he offered to the record company was 11 and a half minutes long. And he said, you have to be kidding. And he's such a contrary guy, because as we listen to this there, it's a perfect 3-minute pop song. It would have been a hit. But apparently the record company very quickly decided, we're not pushing this. We're not promoting this. God knows what it is.
And at the time, you needed a single, and this was the way the whole business worked. Yeah. And this album completely and absolutely sank without trace.
And a lot of people listened to it once or twice and went, geez, that's weird. That's strange. Why would you follow up a huge hit with that? I stuck at it. And slowly but surely, over the weeks, I thought, this is an incredible piece of work. Mm. This is an absolutely unbelievable level of songwriting he's risen to here. He's actually gone past what he was achieving before. It was interesting with the early Dexy's records, say with Young Soul Rebels, you knew what it was coming out of. It was coming out of a great love of Northern Soul. That whole scene in the UK was coming out of a love of Philadelphia Soul Records. Yeah. It was coming out of an obsession with Van Morrison. You could see all the influences written on the sleeve. Similarly, with the whole Celtic Soul Brothers shtick that he went down with the 2RIA record, you could see so much was coming out of Van again, and you could see the influences. With Don't Stand Me Down, you were listening to it going, this doesn't really sound like anything else. This doesn't really sound like anybody else. This is that very, very rare thing. This is original work. This is an original
piece
of work.
There's no question about that. Even I can see that, who doesn't know the album as well as I should. I just want to say one thing to you here. There's, like, if you look up even Wikipedia, just I was looking at a lot of things, but this is one thing. It just says, Trouser Press, which was a magazine at the time, gave it a review and said, a torpid snore that denies entertainment on every level. And then another one, Melody Maker, says, quite the most challenging, absorbing, moving, uplifting and ultimately triumphant album of the year. So, like, talk about dividing opinion.
And, you know, both those things are true in some ways. But it's definitely the classic grower.
Belated recognition I think he has got in this century for this album. I mean, many people say it's their favourite album of the 20th century. I mean, that's been written too. Don't Stand Me Down, album number 3 from Dexy's Midnight Runners, and you're one of those people.
There's a kind of a secret confraternity of us out there. When Dexy's come up in conversation, you kind of lower your gaze and you go, Don't Stand Me Down. And then there's a special glaze.
Yeah, exactly.
The right person's eye.
Yeah, you're in that club. Okay, so hold on a second. Like, I mean, even the cover of the album, the cover is just makes such a statement. The kind of the Ivy League gear, the formal suits, all the rest of it. Were you attracted to the cover of the album by any chance, Mr. Kevin Berry?
What was going on? 3 years earlier, they had the raggle taggle sort of boho gypsy look. It did an awful thing to the fashion sense of young Ireland at the time. Dungaree sales went through the roof.
Yeah.
There were dungarees up and down.
Do you remember the video? Like, was on television all the time. It was a great thing. And they were all with their hands behind their backs doing this Irish jig kind of thing or whatever it was.
Well, I think one of the definitions for me all was with pop genius is not just the music, but what they're doing with the look. And this was such a planned move, I think, on Roland Parks, just to completely go against what they had made famous 2 or 3 years earlier with this kind of boho raggle taggle look, coming back in the Ivy League suits with the kind of the combed and brill creamed hair. When you look at it now, I thought at the time, God, what's going on here? What are they doing? When you look at it now, it has a strangely hipsterish look to it in contemporary terms. The preppy look they
that is true.
Went for.
Okay, but what about middle class idiots who spend their time analysing their own emotions and writing bullshit poetry? How about the newly wealthy peasants with their home bars and hi-fis? He was an angry man.
And it was all coming out on this record. And you could sense that he was never comfortable with the kind of number one pop hit success he had achieved previously. It just wasn't sitting with him, you know.
Yeah.
This is a guy whose influences weren't coming from the hit parade. This was a guy who famously, you know, what was the lyric on the first record? Oscar Wilde and Brendan Behan, Sean O'Casey, George Bernard Shaw. He listed his influences and it was all going back to Irish writing. And so much of this record, this is the great Irish diaspora album, Don't Stand Me Down. It's one of those great records. It talks very implicitly at times about being a fish out of water, grown up with Irish heritage in England. You're never quite at home in either place.
But even my national pride, he didn't feel that he had the right to be Irish. I mean, it's funny the sort of some of the things that come out with him, even in the interviews that he had here. You know, it's just, and then he remembers back. He says it's funny how you always remember the summer by their records. And he was talking particularly about a Jimmy Ruffin record and Lola by the Kinks. And he's got a point there, doesn't he?
He does, yeah. And was it I'll Say Forever My Love, to Jimmy Ruffin track that's mentioned.
That's the one.
Yeah,
on
Knowledge of Beauty, which is the third track on the original release. There was a director's cut released a few years ago with an extra track. But Knowledge of Beauty, I think, draws very directly on his own family background and that sense, that classic thing of an English kid coming home to Ireland in the summers to the cousins and to the granny and cutting the hay and being a complete fish out of water. And then going back to his own place in Birmingham and again just not feeling
exactly
right.
Listen, let's take a little bit of that then, a taste of that. Knowledge of Beauty is what it's called. Don't Stand Me Down is the album from Dexys Midnight Runners, and it's Kevin Berry's choice. Here goes. There you go, Knowledge of Beauty. That is the track from Dexys Midnight Runners. Don't Stand Me Down is the album. Album number 3, very different than albums number 1 and 2. And frankly, that was kind of the end of Dexys for the kind of, for most people. It was really the last album, wasn't it?
Yeah, he made great records before Don't Stand Me Down, a couple of them. He's made some good records since. Everything that he does is worth listening to. But I don't think it ever approached the heights. Again.
And there would be something too with the fact that the lineup changes from the first album to the second album to this album as well. And that kind of shows that maybe they were never really much of a band and it wasn't too easy to hang around with Kevin, was it?
Well, he was definitely extremely difficult to work with. And famously on Young Soul Rebels, he decided that the band could only come spiritually together through physical exertion. So he used to make them run a mile around the studios, around the perimeter outside the studio before recording. So they'd have to come in sweating, pick up the saxophones and the drums and the guitars and go at it. So not the easiest man to
do. You know, I'm just thinking, Kevin, the fact that this album was basically condemned, was chastised and was overlooked, that's almost part of the appeal for you because you're on a mission.
I am, you know, and he is one of the glorious outsiders, you know.
Yeah,
he's just kind of, in the American expression, ornery. He's contrary, you know.
He
just, whatever you're for, I'm against it. That's the pure, it's pure Mayo, I'd say.
It's pure Mayo, really. Brilliant, I love it. What was I going to say? Like, his feelings for Ireland, the track called The Waltz, which I don't know very well, but I've been told that there's a real Irish thing about that track.
It's beautiful. It's the closer. It's really an Irish ballad, you know. It's very interesting. A couple of years ago, he brought out a record which was essentially country and Irish. When yes. he'd done all these cover versions.
Yeah, and the title tells us that. Yeah,
he seemed right at home in that world, you know. But I don't know. I mean, I still have the original thin 1985 vinyl that I play. I updated it with the reissue a couple of years ago. But it's just, you know, you sometimes, like, if someone asks you your favorite book or your favorite yeah. film, you have a different answer every day.
Of course.
But what favorite record, you know, when anyone asks me that question, I can never look past it.
And also, there's a lot of talking in the album, like back and forth between himself and Billy Adams, particularly in the track that we're going to play, though I might leave out a lot of the conversation at the beginning, which is basically, it's kind of like, what's she like kind of thing. He never tells us, does he?
No, it's a masterpiece. On an album of masterpieces, this is the real standout. This is what she's like. 12 and a half minutes long. Unfortunately, we're not going to get it all today, listeners.
No, I'll tell you what, before I play a bit of that, I just want to talk about you and what you're up to this, because this is Kevin Barry we're talking to, by the way, with the Dexys Midnight Runner album. You're going to be appearing in Muldoon's Picnic, in other words, Paul Muldoon's Picnic, at the Line 3 Theatre in Limerick, and this is on Wednesday, August the 10th. Alongside Vaughan Brourke, Lisa Lamb.
Muldoon, I've done a few of these. He puts together this great, it's a cabaret, essentially. It's an old-fashioned cabaret with music and singing and dancing and spoken word and the whole lot. So, and of course, Limerick is my native place. I'm really looking forward to coming back.
And what would you do? Like, do you read pieces out of any of your...
I'll be singing some Dexys. I'll be... I'll be reading a short story. I'll stick to what I'm able for, Dave.
And you'll be reading a short story. Is that something you've written in the last 12 months?
I'll have to see now what I'm. It's probably going to be a new one. Yeah, yeah. Right. It's probably. I'm working on various things at the minute. There's a new book on the go. All right.
All right. Okay. And Dark Lies the Island. You won't be like kind of. I don't know how shall I put it. You won't be reciting from that, will you?
It's all to play for. It's all up for grabs. You wouldn't know what you'd get on the night in question.
And just as a matter of interest, Beetlebone, if you think about it, like in John Lennon, etc. Did you see Paul McCartney at Glastonbury on the telly last week? No,
I did. Yeah, yeah. I thought he was fantastic.
I thought it was great.
It was very emotional. You know, it was really emotional, especially when. And it seemed when I was read in forehand about him doing the kind of. The virtual sort of sing-along with Lennon, I thought that's going to be a bit cheesy, but it was actually very emotional.
Yeah, it actually worked well, because he only did it once for I've Got a Feeling and then just leave it out after that, yeah. But where was Ringo is the big question. Anyway.
I was kind of half expecting Ringo.
Yeah, so was I, to be perfectly honest. So just, I'll only give you that again. You're appearing at Muldoon's Picnic, in other words, Paul Muldoon's Picnic, at the Lime Tree Theatre in Limerick, Wednesday the 10th of August. Vaughan O'Rourke, Lisa Lamb, members of Horselips, etc. And you can check it all out at limetreetheatre.ie. Kevin, it's been a real pleasure, and we'll have you on again when you get that next bit out, whatever it happens to be. And Absolutely. Thank you very much for making the case for an album that I sometimes feel kind of guilty that I never stayed with. And I remember listening to it the first week or two, and then I went, this was about a month after Live Aid, I remember when it came out.
It's never too late, man.
Never too late. On that note, sorry, damn, you mentioned something earlier that I'd love to see on the T-shirt, and I can't remember what it was. You said something about being in Limerick. I can't remember. Anyway, listen, thank you very much, Kevin. We're going to play a little bit of this now, not the whole thing. It's called This Is What She's Like, and this is from the album Don't Stand Me Down, Dexys Midnight Runners. Kevin, good man. Kevin Barry. Thanks a million, Kevin. Good luck.
Here's Dave. Thanks.
Dave Fanning on 2FM.